Welcome to Camp Constitution Radio with your host, Hal Shurtleff. This show was heard on WBCQ The Planet every Monday and Thursday evening, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You could also pick it up on various platforms, Podomatic, that's our sort of our base here. We record on Podomatic, but you can also get it on Spotify, Amazon, and about a dozen other formats. And on occasions, our YouTube channel. And it's brought to you by Camp Constitution, which, among other things, runs a week-long family camp. And our camp for camp this July is filling up pretty fast, July 17th to the 22nd. We also have a ladies' retreat coming right up this next weekend in Plainfield, New Hampshire, the same venue as our family camp in the summer. And we started a weekend family retreat. And that will be from Friday, September 30th to October 2nd at the Camp Sentinel in Tuftonboro, New Hampshire. And if you want more information about our retreats and camp and other activities, please visit our website, campconstitution.net. Now, we just had a wonderful experience this past weekend at the Massachusetts Hope Homeschool Convention. They haven't held a convention in a couple of years because of the unconstitutional lockdown, but it was a great time, and I think this was probably the most successful table or time we've been at any of these homeschool shows. And in fact, somebody, I did an email blast about the event, and we did a couple of workshops, and when a person asked me, well, what was successful about it? What exactly does it, how do you measure success at one of these events? Well, I measure success by the number of people visiting our table, by those either buying literature or getting a constitution handed to them, those that have put their name on an email list. And the two workshops we did, one was on the Sam Blumenfeld legacy, which I'm going to be talking about a little in a few minutes. And Reverend Stevie Craft did one on the Christian response to critical race theory, and both events were very well attended, and people came to tell us came to the table and told us just how very glad they were we were there. And we made some good friends, some of the vendors that we met for the first time and some of those we haven't seen in a few years. So I think that's how you measure success. And there are some intangibles, too, when people walk away with the information. Maybe they did things they didn't know before or things that we reinforce. So those are how we measure success. But before I go into the Sam Blumenfeld archive, I want to mention one of our camp fathers emailed me a question that his son was learning or needed information about. What is a pocket veto? And now the word pocket veto, or the term pocket veto, does not appear in the Constitution, but it is used to describe when a president, and because governors, there are some governors in the states and even some other countries that have things called a pocket veto. Again, it's not in the Constitution, it's just a term. And I'm going to look at Article 1, Section 7. It's the second clause. Every bill which shall have passed the House of Representatives and the Senate shall, before it becomes a law, be presented to the President of the United States. If he approve, he shall sign it. But if not, he shall return it with his objections to that House in which it shall have originated, who shall enter the objections at large on their journal and proceed to reconsider it. If after such reconsideration, two-thirds of that House shall agree to pass the bill, it shall be sent together with the objections to the other House, by which it shall likewise be reconsidered. And if approved by two-thirds of that House, it shall become a law. So I'll stop here and say that's how a bill, if a president does not approve of it, he goes back to the House, or the place where it originated, either the House or the Senate, and they can override the veto, but it's kind of difficult. You need two-thirds, and it doesn't happen very often. Usually, especially today, with this very partisan, it's kind of tough to get. It's tough anytime, I think the War Powers Act, which was passed in 72 or 73 over Richard Nixon veto, passed, was overridden, but it doesn't happen that often. Okay, so, but in all such cases, the votes of both houses shall be determined by yeas and nays, and the names of the persons voting for and against the bill shall be entered on the journal of each house respectively. If any bill shall not be returned by the president within 10 days, Sundays excepted, after it shall have been presented to him, the same shall be a law, in like manner as if he had signed it, unless the Congress, by their adjournment, prevent its return, in which case it shall not be law. So if every bill that the president gets on his desk must be dealt with within 10 days, except Sundays, and if he doesn't either sign the bill or veto it, then the bill becomes law. The other time is if Congress adjourns before the 10 days and he does not act upon the bill, it is considered a pocket veto. So he doesn't actually sign it or return it with his objections. It just dies, and then it has to be resubmitted the next session. And as I did a little research on that, and it looks like Obama, Trump did not exercise the pocket veto. And it has happened over the years. I think Franklin Roosevelt used it the most. But it's just kind of interesting how some of these terms, I haven't heard that term in a while. I think what we do teach the class, and we do mention this, and I don't know if we actually have, I can't recall specifically the last time we used the term pocket veto. But we'll make sure that our campers and those that we teach will understand that. So again, the term pocket veto does not appear in the Constitution. It's just something that is a term that's used to describe that action. And again, found in Article 1, Section 7, Second Clause of the Constitution. So let's get back to the homeschool convention and the importance of homeschooling. I think... well, there are a number of parents, mostly Christian parents, that have wisely taken their children out of government schools, in some cases, and never sent them, like us. It was considered a relatively small minority of Christians that homeschool. My late friend Sam Blumenfeld was the one of the pioneers in the modern homeschool movement, and he told me, strongly urged me never to send my children to a government school. He did that in 1989, and it's some of the best advice I ever took. So I got to know Sam pretty well, and we hosted him a number of places around the Northeast, and he was a regular at Camp Constitution, either just showing up, spending a day, enjoying the fellowship, and a number of times he gave classes, and he loved our camp. When he passed in June 1st of 2015, actually, I should say before he passed, he insisted that I take possession of most of his books, his papers, his recordings, and even some of his personal effects. So, and he eventually willed to us, to me, it was left to me in his will. But again, we took possession of a lot of the material, and we spent a while going through it. Some things, I think Sam he had a nice condo, but he ended up moving to another place and didn't have as much room. So a lot of the things he just kind of hastily put together. So as I'm going through his folders, I might find phone bills and old Newsweek magazines, along with some really real gems, some of his correspondence, his papers, unpublished manuscripts, some of his original manuscripts, and so forth. And what we did was my good friend Bill McNally and I kind of went through everything, and we determined what we need to keep. And there's also a lot of notebooks, which we really haven't done much with at this point. A lot of his notes, when he would read a book and make notes on the book and then use that as he was writing other books, using to footnote and, for material. But we haven't done too much with that as of yet. We even have... one of his, he interviewed Dr. Moshe Shombe of the Belgian Congo, who had been deposed by a communist and he was in exile in Madrid, Spain, and Sam interviewed him in French, and he wrote his notes down during the original interview. The interview became an article, but it was kind of interesting as he's asking questions or writing down the answers. It was very fast. One of the questions, Sam used the term conspiracy, and Dr. Chombay, who said, oui, la force occulte. Of course, the interview was in French. And so I think it's pretty fascinating stuff. So thanks to Mr. Mark Affleck, who is our Camp Constitution newspaper editor. We do have a daily newspaper while Camp is in session, and we upload all of the copies, PDF version, on our website, that you can find them to see daily activities and things. So anyway, Mark is a master at converting things to PDF and taking old cassettes and even reel-to-reel recordings and putting them in MP3 format, and taking old videos, VHSs and other formats, and putting them into an MP4 format. So he and Eric Conover, who is our camp webmaster, collaborated and created the Samuel Blumenfeld Archive, which if you go to our website, you will see the drop-down. And we ask people, all we need from people is their email address and a username. We don't charge anything for it. There is a place where you can donate. Nothing is free. Obviously, there is some cost to us to maintain the site. It's actually not our website directly. There's a link to it, but it's hosted by another entity. So when you see it, you can log in and then you'll go to it. And what you'll find on this incredible archive is a good amount of Sam's books in PDF format. Books like NEA, Trojan Horse in American Education. That's, I think, one of his most popular books as far as getting into the history of government schools, history of government education, and the horrible corruption of this National Education Association, which is nothing more than a labor union. Didn't start out that way, and it goes back to the 1880s. Then he wrote a book. It was called The Marlowe Shakespeare Controversy, and of all the things, all the things, you would think, why would he focus on that? And I remember that more than a few people criticized him. He said, Sam, why are you spending so much time on writing a book about whether or not Shakespeare was the actual author? And Christopher Marlowe may have been the author. And Sam said that next to the King James Version of the Bible, that Shakespeare was the best of English literature, and he believed its true author should be known. So that's also there in a PDF format. And his last book that he co-authored with Alex Newman, Crimes of the Educators, we have the manuscript of that in a PDF format. So there may have been some editing from the manuscript, but not substantially. So you pretty much get what you, if you bought the book, which I do recommend, buy the book from Amazon or other places. I do, which I recommend you buy the hard copy, but you can get the PDF version of the original manuscript. And there's about maybe 7 or 8 or 9 other books, I think, that you can find there. We also have all of his newsletters. He had a monthly newsletter for about 10 or 12 years. And one of the most important newsletters, I believe, is from the June 87. And it was entitled Eugenics and the Making of a Black Underclass, where he goes into the history of the IQ test, the people behind it, the scientific racist. There are two types of racists. Actually, there's more than two. But when you think of racism, you might think of the Ku Klux Klan, the vulgar, even violent types of racism. And then there's the benign racism, where people may not like another group of people, but they don't do any damage. They just have these views. And then there's the scientific racist. This is the racist that believes, based on science, follow the science, that certain groups of people are inferior. And there are plenty of black racists as well as white racists and Asian racists. In fact, racism is really a sin, as our our good friend, Reverend Stevie Kraft, would say that racism is a, we don't have a skin problem, we have a sin problem. So this particular newsletter, we put back in print because our friend, Dr. Felicia Nace, and I interviewed her recently about her upcoming book, or is it forthcoming book, on the Wayne Williams murders and how it, Wayne Williams was the serial murderer in Atlanta back in the, I believe it was in the early to mid 80s. And there was a lot of young black boys that were being murdered and they didn't have any clues initially. And of course the race mongers, the race baiters, the race hustlers said it had to been the Klan because, oh, black man would ever do this. And they found out that their one doing this was a homosexual mass murderer, and he's in behind bars now. But they always try to make it a race issue. Always. The left always makes it a race issue because they want to divide. But she asked me if she could reprint the newsletter in the book. And I, of course, absolutely. So because of the importance of this newsletter, I thought that we would put it in print, in hard copy print, which we did. And you can find it on our website under in our online shop. And I think we sell them for like $4 or $5 a piece. That basically covers the shipping and handling. So there's a lot of timeless things in those newsletters. There are some things you might be talking about, a presidential campaign or a particular congressman. I think he has a newsletter dedicated to John Taylor Gatto. And John Taylor Gatto, who since passed, was a New York City school teacher. And he sort of blew the whistle on how horrible the schools were. And he, in his book, one of his books, he said, and I know about this because I participated in it. Yeah. So he was a real favorite at homeschool conventions. And I got a chance to meet him in Vermont. At least on one occasion, maybe more than a few occasions, way back in the 1990s. But you also have Sam's speeches, which he made at homeschool shows and other venues around the country. And he even spoke, and he went to New Zealand, Australia, and even China. They don't have any of his recordings in China. I do have, I think there's one or two he made in New Zealand and Australia. And he said, interesting, he said that this is a conspiracy to dumb down children in all of the English-speaking countries, and that would be the United States, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, of course, Great Britain, and even in other countries where English is the language of the official language. All of these areas, countries had, you know, had attempted to deliberately dumb down their students. These so-called progressive educators. And Sam, a lot of his essays, and he wrote a lot of, he corresponded with a lot of people. There's correspondence from Ronald Reagan. There's correspondence from, I'm going to think of some, I think there was the president of prime minister of New Zealand, Phyllis Schlafly, and just many other people in the freedom movement as well. And then there's some correspondence from people who didn't quite see eye to eye with Sam. That was pretty interesting. There was one person that Sam was very friendly with. I'm trying to remember his name. He was very well known in the he was a lefty, and when this fellow found out that Sam was this fellow was considered a conservative back in the 60s, and this fellow discovered Sam was involved with the John Birch Society, he wrote him a scathing letter and said, "You are no longer welcome to use my resources in my library." You know, it just shows you the true nature of some of these people. So, and he also had, Sam was the founder or one of the founders of a few groups. One of them was the Society of American Jewish Americanists, and all of the newsletters that we had, as well as some of the correspondence between members, has been posted. And I would probably say it's the only place you will find any material from that organization. I can't be certain, but I've never found anything else. Sam was also the founder or co-founder of the American Friends of Gatanga. I mentioned earlier he had a friendship with the former deposed anti-communist leader, Moshe Shombe, and I hope I'm pronouncing that name right. And so there's newsletters, there's correspondence he had from between Dr. Shombay and Sam and some of the other members, and also American Friends of Algeria. And back in the early 60s, the communists had their sights on Algeria. And at that point, basically, it was considered a French, if you were an Algerian, you were a Frenchman. And there was a sizable Jewish community in Algeria, and the communists caused a lot of damage. A man named Ben Bala was the communist leader who took it over. And of course, the French, led at that time by General de Gaulle, betrayed the people in France, in Algeria. It's not unusual. By the way, Sam believed, and I have no reason to doubt him, that de Gaulle was a communist, and he makes the facts pretty, he makes an excellent case for that. Sam dealt with facts. He didn't deal with emotions and what he wanted to believe. He dealt with facts. And we also have his recordings. There's probably about, if you just played it from the first recording to the last, it might take you about 2 weeks, 20, if you just kept your computer on. And he have some videos. We don't have that many videos, probably about 20 or 30 of the videos that we got from his after he passed. But there are lots and lots of videos of Sam and other places. Even on our YouTube channel, we've got a playlist of Sam's speeches. And what we've been doing in the last couple of years, we have an article, a blog called The Weekly Sam, where we post something from the archive. But the last couple of years, or maybe the last year, I've been taking the recordings from the archive and downloading them up on our Podomatic page and then reposting them. And in some cases, converting them into a YouTube video where it's just the speech, or just audio. But in the video, I'll put pictures of his books, pictures of Sam at various venues. And we plan to keep doing that. We're actually, I think we're down to a few more of the recordings. I think we're in W now. So we don't have a whole lot more, but we do have a lot to turn into videos. Really trying to keep Sam's legacy alive. And what was very gratifying at the conference this past weekend was that a lot of folks came by, and we had Sam's Alpha Phonics. And I guess I would have to say the most important part of the archive, in my opinion, is the Alpha Phonics online version. Now, you can go to the website, sign up for the Blumenfeld Archive, and you can download a PDF of Alpha Phonics. But more importantly, you have the online class, all 128 lessons in audio and video, which is your option, plus a workbook, I should say a parent's guide to it. My wife and I didn't need the workbook. We thought it was pretty easy to use without it, but, Sam did the workbook because some parents, thought it would be an easy thing or a good thing to have. And of course, there are some parents who did not learn to read phonetically, so they learn as well as their students or their children. In fact, we had a parent come by the table this past weekend and say that to us. They said that they were not good readers. They were functionally, they weren't illiterate, but they were not good readers because of the look-say method. And the mom said that when she was teaching her children the vowel sounds and the consonant sounds, she said, "I learned how to read phonetically, and her reading improved." And so it was very gratifying. Now, Sam was a fixture at homeschool shows around the country. I'm not sure when he did his last one. I know last time I saw him at Mass Hope may have been in 2011, and he, of course, passed away in 2015. And he was still active. He was still traveling and giving presentations. He might have slowed down a little bit the last couple of years. And I think I even have some of his credentials over the years, the little badges. And one of them was from Mass Hope in the early 90s, like 91 and 92. And so I'm very honored that we were able to host his archive. And I told Sam on his deathbed, he died on June 1st, I believe it was a Monday. He had just turned the day before, which was Memorial Day. He turned 89 and he died the following day. But the Thursday before he passed, I was able to introduce him to his co-author, the man who co-authored Crimes of the Educators, Alex Newman. Alex and Sam collaborated on the book, and they hadn't met each other. They corresponded, they telephone and Zoom or Skype and what have you, but they didn't meet each other. So we were able to fly Alex from Florida to Boston, and we had planned to do a little interview with the two of them, but just in a few days, Sam had deteriorated so quickly that it would have been an injustice to him. It wouldn't have been right to have him, people see him in that state. But it was very nice. They were like old friends, you know, even though the first time they met each other, they were friends in many respects. And of course, ideological soulmates. Alex, of course, I think Alex was in his late 20s at that time and 15. So Alex really took the baton. But Sam had a lot of people who were his, I use the term disciple, of course, not in the religious sense, but in the ideological sense and the educational sense, that just picked up the baton and where Sam left off. Don Potter was one of them. He's got a website with a lot of Sam's materials. And we tell folks, look, you see all that material on our website, you can take it and repost it and create your own archive. You have your own circle of influence. But I think we got a pretty good site here, a good archive, and what we do encourage people is to share the information, let other folks know about it, let other homeschool groups know about it. And I did a presentation on the archive at the Mass Hopes convention last Saturday, and we uploaded it on our YouTube channel. And what I did was, I gave a little history of our camp, Camp Constitution. Then I just went to the Sam Bloomfield Archive online and just kind of showed people, kind of went around it, showed them what was there, some of the PDFs, some of the newsletters and the audios and what have you. And I think it went pretty well. So we're very honored to be able to keep Sam Blumenfeld's legacy alive. As I told him on his deathbed, that we're going to ensure that his important work will influence generations yet unborn. And that was in 15 and is now 22. It'll be almost 7 years since he passed. And I like to think that there have been some young people who were 7 or 6 years old that have been introduced to his archive. I'm pretty sure I could say that without any hesitation. So we were true to our word, but that's just one generation. We have to look at the generations down the road. And as I said, learning how to read was basic. And Sam, when he first learned about the reading problem back in the early 60s, when he was asked by his friend Watson Washburn, who an attorney from New York, if he would become part of his reading reform organization, and Sam couldn't understand why. He said, reading is so simple. You simply learn the phonics, you learn the vowel sounds, the consonant sounds, put them together, and there, you're a reader. And Watson said, Sam, you have to read a book by Rudolf Fleisch entitled Why Johnny Can't Read. So Sam got a copy of that book, which was published, I think, in 55 or 56, and it changed Sam's life. And Sam also, at that point, he was a sad atheist. When he wrote one of his earlier books on education, it brought him to the New England Calvinist, and that was what led him to a saving knowledge of Jesus Christ, which is the most important thing in someone's life. So, again, Sam had an incredible journey. He had a very productive life. You know, it was productive when after you're dead after 7 years, and he never had any children, never married, but people are still using his important works and talking about him, and that is just an incredible legacy, and I'm honored to be part of keeping that alive and passing it off to the next generation. So visit our website, campconstitution.net, and you'll see the Sam Blumenfeld Archive. Sign up. And all we need is an email address and a username. Anyway, we're running out of time. We want to thank you for listening to Camp Constitution Radio. And until next week, may God richly bless you.